Hi, everyone. This is Derek Harp, the founder and chairman of the Control System Cybersecurity Association International, or as we call it, just CSA. CSA is a 501c6 nonprofit workforce development association dedicated to helping grow, support, and sustain the professionals charged with the cybersecurity of control systems. We're specifically talking about those systems that have pumps and valves and actuators, real cyber to physical moving parts, and control nearly every aspect of our modern connected industries. Thank you for tuning into the podcast. It is my hope you find it inspirational or motivating or revealing or informative, and perhaps at times even a little entertaining. Take care and be well.
Hi, this is Derek Harp, the founder and chairman of CSA and the host of the CSA podcast show. And I've got another great guest for you guys today. I've got Juan Carlos Buenaño. He is the CTO for OT for Armas. He is an engineer by training. He is a born technologist for sure, focused on OT and ICS these days. Scuba diver, mountain biker, general outdoorsman, and a world traveler. And this is going to be a fascinating discussion. Welcome to the show, Carlos.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Very exciting.
All right. So you're in Virginia. That's quasi home, but I know from traveling, you're hardly ever there. And you've been lots of other places. Let's go all the way back before we end up in Virginia. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Venezuela, Caracas. I grew up in a little town called Maracay, which is probably about an hour and a half from Caracas. My mom is Italian, so I've got an Italian background. My dad is Venezuelan, but I finished university in Venezuela, graduated as an electronic engineer. But then I wanted to travel. I wanted to get out of it. Not because it's not great. So I love my hometown and all my friends and family, but I just wanted to see something else. So I moved to Australia, started in Sydney. I lived in Australia for 23 years. And
when you made that choice, did you have any idea you'd be there that long? Or is this just one of these things, that's just the way it unfolded?
I actually went there just to learn English.
Yeah.
That's it. I just, you know, my idea was like, I'm going to go learn some English and come back and continue on working as an engineer, as a control engineer, as a, you know, the passion that I found in my career. But as soon as I stepped on Australia, Sydney, I just fell in love with the country, with everything, nature, you know, the lifestyle, you know, everything. And, you know, I continued on and decided to do a master's degree at GP for telecommunications. At the time, I was a control systems engineer. And I thought when I started being a control system engineer, everything was serial. And, you know, Ethernet started to come in. And it's like, this is going to be the big thing. I need to learn some of that. So I decided to do the master's degree in telecommunications just to learn more about networks and, you know, telecommunication technology. And after graduating, then I got I moved from Sydney to Perth, which is actually the other side of the country. And that's where, you know, basically all the oil and gas industry and the mining is. So then I basically start working properly as an engineer there and start learning so much. Then after, then I, 11 years after, I moved to the Gold Coast in Australia, to back and forth a little bit. And then worked there for an energy company for about 8 years, something like that. And then finally, I got a job, Clarity, and with Clarity, I stayed in Australia for a few years. And then I got a job with Armies. I've been in Army for 5 years now. But then the last year, they asked me, you know, you want to move to the U.S.? I'm here now in the U.S. for the last year.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
I used to live and spend a lot of time not far from where you are now. My Virginia years, I think it was in Virginia about 5 years. So I know that general area pretty well.
Yeah, very nice.
A lot of people, a lot of great places to eat in that greater area of every cuisine, I think, you know, in the world, you can find it there. So those early years in Australia, you know, a lot of times what we talk about on this sort of personal journey podcasts are, you know, people's origins. And where OT cyber, in this sort of subspecialty of cybersecurity, you know, how did you end up there? And so you're a straight up process engineer and cybersecurity. And you know, I mean, I'm going to ask you, you know, where that comes in. But before that, you're working. That's where you started. It's all about the engineering and about the process. And so that's your that was your underpinnings, your foundational knowledge came from there.
Yeah, everything goes back to university. I was actually studying electronic engineering at the time. You have three choices. You can actually be, you know, focusing on electronics, design and development. You can go to take the path of telecommunications or take the path of control systems. And I think I was the only person amongst my friends that I took the path of control systems. I had a lecturer that was an amazing teacher, and he taught me everything about control systems. We had a lab, and it was the first time that I touched a PLC and I programmed the PLC. We had proper sensors and little conveyors, and we have like a little play to play with the technology, and I just got hooked with a lot of logic and accommodating the sensors, automating the process, and that's how I started. My first job really was in control systems, what with an integrator. We're actually doing projects for a brewery, which is another fire story because at the time, I was actually back in 1997, politically correct didn't exist. So we have Fridays open bar at the brewery, straight from the top, you know.
You were taking 50% of your compensation in brew and 50% in cash.
Exactly right. So then we work hard, you know, we had to basically automate the work with the brewery and then automate the process. But then every Friday afternoon, you know, about 3 p.m., you know, they give you a glass and straight from the process. -5 degrees come in. So that's probably the best beer I ever had because it's like right straight from the silos into the glass. You can imagine how amazing that was. But yeah, so I always had that curiosity about telecommunications, you know, everything connecting all the Ethernet. At the time, all I knew was Profibus and serial communications. So Ethernet was actually sort of like starting. Siemens was actually one of my first vendors that Nobinate. And they just started to provide some Ethernet communications, like IP addresses and gateways and masks. It's like, you're all confusing at the time. And I decided, that's why I decided to start like looking into telecommunications, because at the time I thought, look, this is going to be the big thing for control systems. Everything is going to be connected. It has to be. It's a lot easier. So that's why, you know, I worked actually for that company for about 2-3 years. That was in Venezuela. I moved then to Australia to do my master's degree or my graduate degree in telecommunications, just to learn all about networking, routing, IP addresses. You know, I just wanted to understand, have a very, very good understanding of networking and how to integrate control systems together. Okay, and you know, the switches and the VLANs and all these concepts, is to make sure that I had that very well understood and applied to control systems.
So we're talking that telecommunications work and understanding all the communication pathways is 24 years ago. Do you remember any security discussions in there?
At the time was actually all about interconnecting devices. Not about correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not about securing devices. Essentially it's all about, you know, making the packets go from one side to the other. Right?
Yeah. So that's it. I always ask that, and it's almost always, no, we weren't talking about that. Occasionally somebody has some story, usually by accident. It wasn't like they were taking a course on security for industrial control systems, but they had some sort of security story or something that sort of evoked that at that time. But most people, it's like, nah, we were looking at connect these things, and if we can remotely get the telemetry from over there to over here, this is great.
That's it. That's all it is. And then we have some radios, and then we have the gateways, and then convert that from serial. And that's about it, right? So that we don't have not even the concept of firewalls at the time. But then I got a gig at Honeywell, and that's oil and gas. And they were quite strong when it comes to security. You know, they already started. That's where my first interaction with IEC 62443. And then understanding all the levels and how we classify the levels and the systems. And I started to work with, you know, Active Directory and creating policies in Active Directory. So it's not just control systems now, you know, just networks. And then I started to get into the systems itself, the directory authentication, role access, you know, control, EDRs and backup systems. So it was actually the very, you know, because we were actually working on greenfield projects, we have to basically think about all that from the ground up, because the customer's expectation was that, you know, we're going to provide you, it's like a turnkey solution, a solution that works not only on the process side, but also on the system side, and is all very, very well maintained. And Honeywell did the end-to-end design and implementation, and I learned so much in there.
Any stories, any early sort of cybersecurity stories, you know, discoveries or ahas or things you remember just, you know, that happened during that sort of, that's the awakening of cybersecurity for these industrial systems. It's right during that era for anyone in the world, right?
Yeah, no near misses as at the time. I don't think, you know, the concept of threats or vulnerabilities was actually there. So that we actually did, you know, a lot of work around the patching, but the patching more for, you know, just to keep the device, the systems up to date more than from vulnerability point of view.
Yeah, reliability, keeping reliability.
Reliability, exactly. Yeah. Just to make sure that the operating system didn't show us the, you know, blue screen of death, basically. That's what it was all about. It was just to keep the system running up to date, just to make sure that all the bugs were actually fixed and the system was reliable in the long term. But one of the funny stories, like I always think about the funny stories, is like, if, you know, you have OPC-DA. OPC-DA, you know, is basically an RPC communication, which essentially, you know, you have a firewall with OPC, it's like open everything, you know, because you have, you know, one-way communication and then dynamic ports coming back. And it's like, it's no way to actually stop this. But in saying that, you know, it was so difficult to configure. And then, you know, you ask, you know, what OPC stands for? Like, well, you know, according to what I suffered, it's like, oh, please connect. That's what it stands for. And that's sticking out, stuck in my mind because it was a lot, right? It was so funny every time. It's like, what does it stand for? Oh, please connect. Anyway, that's when I started to basically, you know, understanding the security. And it was more about, you know, protecting the OT network from the IT network, not from the external network. We didn't have much external communications at the time from a manufacturing point of view or from a vendor point of view. So that came later, you know, a lot later.
You talk about a manufacturer wanting to connect to their equipment for any reason.
For maintenance and diagnostics and calibration, anything like that. So everything was actually on site. If you needed an expert, they would have, you know, flown over to the facility, you know, from Germany, from, you know, whatever else, and, you know, come to the place and then do the work. Okay. But then my career, if you think about it, was, you know, starting from a control system engineer, nothing else, and slowly going into networks and then networks and system, but all together. Okay. So I will say like starting 100%, then, you know, 90%, 10% control systems, and then 80%, and then 10% control system, 10% systems. And then started to, so like slowly, every project, not even every company, every project, I was actually more involved into the networking systems, which at the time today, you know, when you look at network systems integrations, is what we call today cybersecurity, right? And it was actually step by step. And at some point, I was actually working 50-50. I remember working in a project where I designed the control network. I actually work with the firewall, configuring the firewall, doing the network segmentation, you know, from the ground up, right, from the very start. And, you know, that's so much fun when you do it that way because, you know, essentially you design your IP addresses in a way that, you know, your routing and then your policies, everything is whitelisting. But it was good. But it wasn't until I got to the energy company, Origin Energy in Australia, where I was basically more, I would say, swap. You know, I was 90% on the cybersecurity portion and 10% on the control system. And that 10%, it was only integration. It was only, you know, getting the control system devices communicating to the network. But what the focus was, implementing a control network for this APLNG project to be basically secure. In that case, we already, that was basically, I don't know, like 10 years ago, maybe. So we were actually focusing on, you know, securing the wells because essentially the wells were located in public places, not owned by the company. So anyone could actually have access. And then that was the concern, how can we secure all these, you know, 3,000 locations, you know, to make sure that our gas plants and the water treatment facilities and so forth were actually protected from external threats.
Yeah, you're talking about the nexus of physical security and cyber, that if somebody has access to an endpoint, then they have access potentially, depending on whether it's secured, to everything or to upstream, you know, networking. And,
exactly.
And so physical access matters too. And we see that in a lot of different verticals, you know, building control systems, like go down into the basement, open up this closet, and oh my gosh, it's all there.
Exactly.
You know, like, you know, segmentation, not so much. So that's interesting that thinking about sort of wells, you know, out in various places, all remote, right? I mean,
remote. You could actually be driving, you know, on a highway and then turn right, and then you have a cabinet right there. A cabinet, you know, you have the separator. You can see the separator with a little antenna, and then you have a cabinet, and you go to the cabinet. It's locked. You have a key, but that's a key that you can just simulate with a screwdriver, you know. It's like, hey, it is.
Yeah. Now that makes sense. People ask all the time the nexus of physical security and cyber. And when I started, you know, 2 decades ago or 24 years ago, it's like, that's a totally different discipline. But it was about guards and guns then. But now it's not. Now there is overlap, and there's obviously camera systems and their networks, and there's more overlap between the disciplines of physical security and cyber than there was back then.
Exactly. And it's important, right? So it's important because, you know, you are extracting gas. It's just, you know, from the get-go, it's flammable, right? So it's dangerous. And if you actually have access to the RTU, so you could actually make some damage if, you know, from that specific property, or even actually to the pipeline if you like, right? And then affect the whole area, right? The whole section.
So I like the way you describe it. Your path is hardcore engineer, and it just gets gobbled piece by piece, bit by bit. I think based on me talking now to so many hundreds of different people, that's probably would be considered by a lot of people as ideal. Meaning they say, where do the practitioners in this space come from? They could have an IT background and could learn engineering. There's people doing it. But when I listen to hiring managers and senior people, like, man, my preference is somebody that really understands how the operating technology works, and how resilience and reliability and patching is very different, and how all that works fundamentally. And they've added the knowledge of, you know, and you sort of had it right there with that graduate degree. You begin to work on the pathways that some process control engineers still never added to their career path. They kept working more and more in just pure engineering. You started inserting the pieces that led to where you are today.
Exactly.
That's an ideal pathway for OT cybersecurity for sure.
It is great because, you know, every time that I had that one project, it taught me something new, okay, and something new. And then to the point that, you know, I was able to understand routing like 100% on a different protocols of routing, and then firewalls and what type of firewalls and how do you actually create, you know, VLANs and properly and all the different concepts that at the time is like, what is it? It's like, what? DHCP. Okay. And then you just go and have to learn it properly to implement it. And what are the rules and how you can control it? What are the ranges? And what I love of that learning it step by step is that you're still very, you know, involved in the project, on the control system project, but slowly, slowly, you actually have to learn these specific tasks, you know, from a network perspective, from a system perspective. And you have a name, you have something, an objective, a very, very specific objective that, you know, you help you learn it better because you go straight to the application. And that's how, you know, and when you're programming 50,000 devices or configuring 50,000 devices, or handling 50,000 devices, the repetition makes you learn it like so well, right? Because, okay, so even like to the Active Directory, you know, domain policies, and how do you configure and how many parameters do you have? And because you have all these different sections of what you need to secure and use cases that you need to use, it just becomes like really interesting.
Yeah, that the process you went through also, it gives you fundamental, I don't know the word I'm looking for, you know, empathy, understanding of what the business is trying to do. And that's super essential for me trying to apply cyber. And there are some frustrated practitioners who don't quite have enough of the operating technology background so to apply cyber. Yeah, but in context, apply cybersecurity, but we still have a mission to accomplish. You know, do you really fully understand the mission? How this process works, how these systems work together, That has to happen. And we want to secure it, not we need to secure this. You know, it's got to work really well, and it's got to achieve its mission, moving fuel or pumping fuel or making things or whatever it is. And I think that's something I hear over and over is for people maybe with less of the operating shock technology engineering background is get intimate and take your lunches and go down to the plant and tell the guys, you know, show me how this works and learn more about what they're trying to do, what they must do there, what their mission is, because that's a missing element for some folks that are trying to get their job done, but maybe don't have that engineering background.
Understand the challenges is important, right? Because a control engineer has challenges. You know, the plant manager, the engineering team have challenges. You know, I really need it because that was a requirement from a compliance perspective. So I didn't have an option. And as a control engineer, I needed to actually implement all that. But the challenges that we had were actually a lot more than what you think of, right? Because, you know, 2 years, right? Just 2 years within the project. The project lasted like 8 years, but we only have 2 years. And the second year, we needed to start thinking about patching devices. Okay. And an example is, well, we need to patch the Yokogawa system. We need to patch the PLCs and the controllers and all these things. And it's like, okay, well, let's just, you know, create a schedule of how to patch this. And we talked to, let's just talk to the plant manager. You know, it wasn't even completely handed over to operations. And we still, because they were already producing, we need to do this. And then, okay, we'll have a shutdown window, in 3 months. Talk to the project manager because they have a project manager for a shutdown window to see how we can allocate some time to put this in. Because it needs to be in the scope of the shutdown window. And we went there and it's like, well, you know, we really love to help you. But if you patch the Yokogawa system, that means that the work that we're doing on site to fine tune the process, we're not going to be able to do it because the system is going to be down. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to fit that in before or after, because once we test it and it works, we have to continue on. We have to be before. But if we do it before, we might not be able to restart the process. So, and then I need to prioritize it and put it into the next window.
Yeah.
And there are challenges because, you know, you need to understand that process, you have two main objectives, is people safety and production. Now they are trying to push also part of, because it's intertwined, you know, people safety and cybersecurity is becoming more and more sort of like linked. And that's actually the angle that we're trying to push. It's like, well, your main role is people safety. Okay, what if we have an attacker that goes and does something like they did in Stuxnet, where, you know, they do masquerading and start, you know, changing the process without the operators noticing. And one day then everything, you know, explodes. What would that happen? Well, you know, you're starting to look into your safety. You need to make sure that you understand that. And understanding this, the two sides of the story, and then trying to speak the different language, right? The operational language, but also the security language is very important in this particular environment.
What advice do you have for engineers that might be out there that do not have the luxury of the exposure to the telecommunications, the work that sort of came in, or exposure for you that came in early? So they're process control, they're electrical engineer, whatever professional engineer they are, but they see this space and they want to get into it. What do you recommend what do they augment their knowledge with and experience set with first?
Look, there's a couple of things. A lot of people, I try to mentor people as well, and a lot of people come and ask me that, right? So how do you get to understand, you know, control systems, but that I already have control systems, how do I get to where you are? And look, for me, what my logical path is to understand networks first, okay? And you don't have to be certified. And, you know, you probably, if you follow, I mean, again, not associated with Cisco, right? And now we have a lot more other vendors out there that, you know, can do the same. But a CCNA certification, just follow that path. you know, take some courses. There's a lot of courses in there. You know, these days you can find a lot of secondhand Cisco devices that are less than $100. You know, buy those, you know, play with those, you know, implement it into your place, you know, create a little lab where you actually have a VLAN where you have, I don't know, your TVs, and then another VLAN that you have, and then play with that, you know, so it helps you understand the dynamics and the physics behind all this. But take the course, the CCNA, that's the very first step, right? So that once you understand networking and you understand, you know, how the protocols work, how the computers communicate to each other, and how the ICS devices communicate to the computers, and how the, you know, the engineering stations then downloads information to the PLCs and so forth. So you start creating a basically a map of how everything works, not only from the control system point of view, but then how, you know, under the hood works when it comes to, you know, from one device to another. And then, you know, play around with the system side of things, okay? So play around with Active Directory, with EDRs, you know, antiviruses, you know, play with backup systems. And ultimately, if you can actually follow a cybersecurity certification like CIS, for instance, this is really, really good. Because, again, you don't have to be certified, but follow the path. There are really good, cheap courses out there. You start getting an idea what basically is all about, what you know, what you don't know. Start, you know, covering the gaps and talk to customers, talk to, you know, go to conferences and then talk to people and see what you can absorb from people's conversations. That's basically my advice here.
Hey everybody, Derek Harp here, and I just want to take a brief moment to thank three companies that make this podcast series possible. The first company is Waterfall Security Solutions. They led the charge this year for the podcast, and they specifically sponsored it from their podcast, the Industrial Security Podcast. So check that out. That's a great linkage to an entire other series of over 100 episodes. They had their anniversary recently, focused on control system cybersecurity. And they were supported this year by KPMG and Fortinet. We could not do this without them. These companies not only have supported this podcast series this year, but they supported CISA since its very early days 8 years ago. And we're entirely grateful to the teams and dedicated professionals at Waterfall Security Solutions, KPMG, and Fortinet.
And my experience in this market, and all my guests have had a similar message, it's very open, a lot of people helping other people. I don't know, you know, I've been in cybersecurity so long, I don't know a lot of other industries intimately, and maybe they're equally like that, but man, our industry does seem to be a lot of experienced people more than willing to help lesser experienced people with a hand up. You mentioned mentorship. You know, let's touch on that. And how has that played out for you, receiving or giving? In your how important has that been in your career path?
It has been amazing, right? So I was lucky enough when I started, you know, fresh from university, I met Andre. He was a mentor for me, you know. So he taught me, you know, the things that I didn't know about control systems, you know, from how to program, you know, a lot of logic to how to be efficient when you configure the displays on a SCADA system. So little things like that, right? So he was actually a very, very big influence, and he helped me to learn a lot of what I know now about control systems. But you need to meet a lot of people in your career. I think there is anyone that you meet has something to teach you, whether it's good or bad. Always be alert, you know, always be, you know, try to absorb what you can learn from other people. And again, like you said before, you know, I don't have a specific format for me to teach other people, but, you know, I do, for instance, at work, I have a weekly session. Actually, I had it just a couple of hours ago where, look, this is an open mic session. You know, ask anything. What do you want to learn? It doesn't really need to be something about armies and such, but something about anything that you're working on right now that you're struggling, whether it's networking wise, systems.
Arm as team members? Is that it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So an internal mentorship, idea exchange, education, whatever you want to call it, opportunity.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome.
Exactly. And that's actually great because, you know, at the beginning, I only have 4 people, and now I have 25 people that show up. And it's not just me talking, it's other people asking questions and other people helping through. They essentially, you know, helping other people to do the job properly, right?
How often is that? This is a really great
experience
here, by the way, because it's something people could emulate. Maybe their company's not currently doing this. It's a great, I love all the things that it represents in getting people together like that. It's like a lunch and learn. It's, you can call it different things, but the guts of it is saying, hey, let's exchange and let's learn from each other. Each of us has some strengths and we can share each other. What a great way to strengthen a team. Yeah. Is that a weekly or monthly or bi-monthly?
It's a weekly and, you know, and I never cancel it. You know, that to me, I'm committed to it because I love, you know, helping people to do their job properly, right? So, and especially in OT, OT seems to be, you know, that massive big wall that people can't break through. And I really like to think that, you know, I'm making either the wall lower or I'm actually just giving a lift to other people to get over it, right?
Look over this wall. It's not as scary as you think.
I think the complexity is just to talk to the customers, right? To resonate to people in the engineering team. Hey, Rook, I understand your pain. I understand, you know, what you have to go through. This is a value that we can add to your process. And this is the value. If you do this, this is the value that we're going to gain. Right? At the end of the day, you know, we need to find a way that we can all work together.
Well, that's a great message. And that's harmonic with Zisei. You know, how do we get everybody to work together in the same company? Certainly amongst other sorts of companies working together, but even within the same company, there's still disharmony in too many enterprises, especially between these kinds of stakeholders, the people working traditional IT and the people with the networks at a plant. And, you know, I still hear stories like, oh my gosh, we're not worried about the threat adversaries. We're not getting along. You know, that's bad. We got to build bridges, speak common language, and learn each other's vocabulary. And so everything you've shared is so.
And it is possible. It is very possible. Like we did a project, again, Origin Energy, where we have to create a data center. Okay. And we had to have the data center. In the data center, we have to obviously have OT applications. And, you know, IT applications as well, right? Because it was office space, and then we have the operator room was right in the middle. And then we have like three or four floors with people working in different departments. So we had to work together to design this data center where we had, you know, our cabinets for the control systems and the other 5-7 cabinets to the IT system. And, you know, call it IT-OT convergence, but we got the two teams together for about 5 months to design the system. And the advantages were amazing because we had standard drawings, standard designs, IP address, you know, schedules that match. And it was actually perfectly because any applications to and from the IT were already designed with security, okay? And again, maintaining the data center and all the different, you know, sensors and humidity and temperature and all that was monitored by the OT people, by the operators, and they were all, the IT people were benefiting from that process. And on top of that, then we have the procurement, okay? So we bought exactly the same equipment, OT or IT. And then Cisco just gave us like 70% discount because that's what happens, right? So you have a bigger volume of devices that you have to buy, switches and routers and, you know, modems and firewalls. So we have only one bill of materials and then one purchase order and a great discount. So it sounds silly, but it just works really well if we talk together at TNOT. And then, yes, you don't tell me how my control system works, but you can tell me how can I actually secure it so that it's a standard to the way you work, right? So then that works really well.
That's awesome. Well, it's always fun to end on sort of future gazing. What are you excited about in the future? And or what do you see ahead? Maybe it's a challenging thing that you're bothered by something you see on the horizon. So it can be exciting or not. But like, what's just beyond the horizon for OT, ICS, you know, related cybersecurity?
Look, it is, again, the IT and OT convergence. I think we can actually just work together. We're going to be, you know, using the standard IT tools into the OT environments, and we can actually, you know, work together to make an OT network more secure. What is exciting means there's a lot of effort at the moment. I can actually see that worldwide, you know, we are creating different frameworks. And I love the framework, the way the frameworks have been created right now, because the one thing is actually I see that people could, you know, it struggles is, okay, how do I implement this? Where do I even start? So frameworks have been designed now to, you know, take you by the hand, and you take IEC 62443, for instance, with the foundational requirements, and then you have 1 to 7, and then 1 starts like authentication, and 2, and it's like if you go step by step, you know, you can actually say, ah, okay, I do this now, and I do this now. And it's not an overwhelming, you know, process. It's just a very well-defined framework that you can follow. I'm excited about that because it's a lot of people in the community working towards that. Okay, so, and I say starting to have more conferences worldwide that we can all participate and, you know, give ideas and learn from each other. Right? So that's actually very exciting for me.
It's funny you should say that. So our live event yesterday was Steve Mustard, the past president of ISA and longtime contributor to 62443. And so we had attendance numbers and questions being asked, some of our record numbers yesterday, because he said, I'm going to break it down. It was sort of an introduction to all the different parts of it, and making it understandable and making it less scary. And it was a huge number of people came to interact with him on that.
Exactly. And that's what I'm excited about. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're now at one of my favorite parts of the way I like to end the show. And so if you're up for it, I have borrowed 10 questions from a television show called Inside the Actor's Studio, where the longtime host, James Lipton, who has passed on, would ask all the famous actors and actresses we would all recognize. He'd always ask them the same 10 questions at the end of their career interview. And so really that show inspired this series that I do. It's very similar. And so if you're up for it, I'll ask you the same.
It's just
a questionnaire. He borrowed it from a French show before he, you know, so I feel like I'm just passing him, you know, in that long channel. So if you're ready for it, we'll end with that.
Let's do it.
What is your favorite word?
My favorite word is operationalization. And the reason is it's just one word that involves so much when it comes to cybersecurity that, you know, I just love it.
What is your least favorite word?
Defeat. And just because, you know, we shouldn't get to that point. We could continue trying.
What turns you on, either creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
And a good challenge. Honestly, a good challenge is actually something that is something, you know, if it's difficult, I just get motivated. It's like, it has to be a way to actually achieve it.
What turns you off?
Politics, micromanagement, you know, it can be frustrating. You know, you need to be creative, and politics and micromanagement is something that kills creativity in my opinion.
And what is your favorite curse word?
Actually, I don't swear, or try not to, but I think I'm going to change it a bit, and hopefully you allow me to do that. But I think because I'm a very open and very friendly and trying to be reachable to people, when people say, see you around, I just don't like it. It to me, feels like, if I see you, great. If I don't see you, great too.
What sound or noise do you love?
Look, I'm a outdoors person. You know, I love the sound of nature. You know, I love going mountain biking and listening to the birds, listening to the rivers. You know, that's, you know, something that is my, you know, my happy place.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Car horns. I don't have to explain why.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Look, I was always thinking about that, but an instructor of some sort of outdoor sports, like, you know, scuba diving, for instance, that would be something that I would really like to.
I love that answer. I won't lie. What profession would you not like to do?
Look, being a CTO, I have to deal with a lot of politics. I would really like to be a politician, to be honest. There's other roles in there that I don't like to do either, but I reckon politician. I like to be honest and straight and, you know, not mess around. So basically politician.
And if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I was thinking about that. I think it will be like something like, you did it.
Awesome.
That's it.
Well, thank you, Carlos. Carlos Buonanno, he is the CTO for OT at Armis. We've just had a great chat. We're wrapping up. Thank you for preparing for this and doing setting aside the time to do this for our community, but also for your years of service to the community. The way I look at it, where our modern society depends on those of you that are doing that line of work. And most people just take for granted that the lights stay on and the water keeps flowing and everything seems to be working. Boy, there's a lot of things behind the scenes and we better keep it safe. And people like you dedicate your professional life to that. So thank you for that as well.
Thank you so much for having me. I really, really enjoyed this interview. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yep. Take care. Bye, Carlos. See you soon.
Bye. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is Derek Harp, the founder and chairman of the Control Systems Cybersecurity Association International, or as we call it, just CISA. CISA is a 501c6 nonprofit workforce development association dedicated to helping grow, support, and sustain the professionals charged with the cybersecurity of control systems. We're specifically talking about those systems that have pumps and valves and actuators, real cyber to physical moving parts, and control nearly every aspect of our modern connected industries. Thank you for tuning into the podcast. It is my hope you find it inspirational or motivating or revealing or informative, and perhaps at times even a little entertaining. Take care and be well.